Well, I've been let down. I was meant to have a podcast today. I was going to do my cheery, hey, welcome back to It Starts With You podcast. But I thought I'd just start this podcast like this. I don't know. After 10 o'clock this morning, I was supposed to have a podcast with a TikToker that's doing extremely well on TikTok. And I don't know if they have forgotten. I've tried messaging them a few times. I've only got their email address. Should have took their phone number. To send the teams, and nothing's come back. So I record this at this moment in time at 2:30 in the afternoon. I thought I'd give it the day. I got some work to get on with, some calls to get on with. I thought I'd give it the day and see what happens. And they haven't turned up. So my brain is in podcast mode. I don't know if you do this. It's like you go to the gym, gym's closed, you're still in gym mode. So you go for a run instead, or you really fancy a Chinese, but the Chinese is closed. So you've got to think, well, what's the next best thing? You know what I mean? And you go and do the next best thing, or you head down to Sainsbury's and get a Chinese instead. When your brain, I don't know if your brain does that. My brain's in this mode, and I'm like, I got to talk about something. And I did be honest with you, I've had a few people lined up for podcasts the last couple of months, and because of work commitments, not just them, myself, things have just knocked on. And I'm not proud to say that I've had to cancel some stuff. And when you're looking at doing them next year or the next couple of months, I don't know yet. Things just fall off. But this is the thing, when you run a business, you're running a recruitment business, and any recruiters listening to this will know what I mean, especially on your own. You're spinning so many freaking plates. You know, you got your business development plate, your marketing plate, your social media plate, which I always see different to marketing, by the way. And then you're on the business kind of accountancy and all the other bits and bobs and debt chasing and well, not so much these days because I've got a really good bunch of guys at Isotope that does all that stuff for me. But you still got to run several different hats. And then you've got your personal life and your kids and whatever the hell it is on top of that. So you're running around, basically, like a madman. 60 hours a week, even though 40 of them are in an office, and the other 20 are inside your house or in the car or in the supermarket, and you pick up a call, taking a job in a supermarket at 10 o'clock in the morning on a Saturday. That's happened a few times in my career. So you never switch off. So you're trying to fit these things into it, and I really enjoy doing podcasts. I really enjoy speaking to people. And I really enjoy this bit of the podcast as well, where you just talk about stuff that's with someone else, obviously, not to myself, about these things. So yeah, just frustrating. It does feel like I've been ghosted. And as recruiters, we are used to being ghosted. We may moan about it. We may get pissed off about it. But we're used to it. And what you do is you've got to almost suck it up, move on. The really frustrating part is if you've worked on a project, worked on or filling a job for, let's say, 2-3 weeks is a lot of time in recruitment just trying to find people. But we could be looking for people up to 8 weeks, 12 weeks, sometimes a year, as crazy as that sounds. But you know, that 8-12 week part where you've near the end of the process and the candidate just disappears off the face of the earth and doesn't say anything to you, that's frustrating. That kind of part of ghosting. So if you kind of categorize ghosting, there's the stupid recruitment ghosting where they just don't tell you feedback. But then a lot of applications you get, a quick automated email can solve that. Anyway, but if you get down a process and then you just don't get back to the candidate, that's just really shitty recruitment. Okay, that's one type of it. That's just bad practice, bad training, sometimes bad systems, and sometimes the way that recruiters are managed, which I could talk all day about, by the way, does push the recruiter down the time level route of, well, that's not really my time to spend on that, and I'll just not bother sending that. And that doesn't happen verbally, by the way. That happens subconsciously. And they just don't really look at it. They just don't look at it as a thing, because that's the general practice in that particular office. Whereas myself, it's quite easy to send feedback. I mean, yesterday, I sent feedback to a candidate that we've been waiting for feedback for 8 weeks from a company. And they finally come back to me because some stuff inside the company was happening and I didn't know what was going on. So for me, every week I was sending a quick email out to this candidate saying, sorry, no information. And I kind of came around, oh, thanks, Mark, thanks for telling me. And then we finally got our feedback, it's a no. And then there's a good explanation for the no. And I'll hear that from the candidate. And I don't know if anyone does that. For me, that was like a weight off my shoulders. Now that's one email a week I don't need to send to update that person. And I think it needs to be like that. It needs to be a weight on your shoulders where you've got to tell these people these things. So that's kind of part one of ghosting. That's like, not part one, section one of ghosting. You know, the typical stupid ghosting. And not just recruitment companies did that, by the way. I've had British Gas ghost me before when I asked them to do something and they never come back to me about. Have anything else do that before? Oh, credit card ones did that to me before as well, but they profusely apologised and gave me 50 quid credit. But that's a different matter. Wow, that was great that day. We went out to Five Guys, I think, that day, just have a burger on them. So that's like section one. Then you got like a section two ghosting, and this is where candidates fall into, they're not bought into the role, or they're not bought into to what's going on. The interview's too far away, it's not what they wanted, the salary doesn't sound right, and instead of saying no, they just don't answer, they switch everything off and they just don't go. And when they don't turn up that day, they don't turn up for the interview, is a warning sign to you as a recruiter. And I don't know if other recruiters do this. I use it as a warning sign that the disenfranchisement of that candidate is mostly because I've done something wrong. So the first time it happens, I send this little email to the candidate along the lines of, look, I understand you didn't turn up for the interview. I might be able to get you a second interview, but let's have a conversation first about why you didn't turn up, and then I'll put some presumptions. I'll list a couple of presumptions, exactly the ones I just said, that, you know, disenfranchised from it, you know, they didn't have enough information, don't understand the salary shit. And the candidate, most, about 6 or 7 times out of 10, comes back and goes, yeah, that's exactly why I didn't turn up. But they'll have a little excuse and then they'll say that's why. And it's always the second part of the conversation is the real proper conversation. And they come back and say, oh, okay, sweet, so go and have the interview. And they don't turn up the second time, then you know that they've wasted your freaking time. So I do have like a two-strike system. But in order for them to get to that interview, day one interview, that I have a process before that interview, where it's a three-step process I have, where I email them, get confirmation, they email back saying yes. And then I'll drop them a quick text message saying, good luck on your interview tomorrow. And then come back and say, thank you very much. And then phone call the day before, text message on the day, because if the interview's in the morning, or if the interview's in the afternoon, I do the phone call in the morning. Just touch base with them to make sure they're all right and they got everything for that interview. And you can weed out a lot of people that are not going to turn up in that process, because if they don't answer three of those processes, then I send a warning shot to the manager straight away. And it's just experience that's done that to me. And I'd say 99% of the time I'd be right. When they don't normally communicate by the second time, definitely the third time, then I know they're taking the piss. And they're not going to turn up. And then I push the hold button for a moment and see what happens. And a lot of them don't come back to you. So that's stage two of ghosting, or the second kind of section of ghosting, that how I look at it. And that doesn't happen a lot of the time, by the way. I don't suffer from ghosting as bad as some people do, because the type of roles I have tend to be in that kind of professional engineering manufacturing region, where people tend to turn up to everything they do. But there are people within that still that ghost. I mean, I've had a 65 grand a year engineering manager ghost once and disappear and not turn up for interview, or even a design director of a very large company did that to me once. But then it's working on what's really going on in their lives. And we've got to look at it like that as well. And I think, you know, NLP, if you ever do NLP, they teach you that everyone has good intention in what they do. Even murderers have a good intention in what they do, because they believe when they're committing the crime, or they believe when they're not, when they're ghosting, that it's somewhere along the lines there is a good intention for doing that. And that could be, oh, thank God I didn't go to that interview. And that's the good intention from the perspective. So you've got to look for what their perception of good intention is. And that's why I send that email, is to try to touch into that, tap into that good intention, especially if the candidate is a rare soul and their CV looks great and the company really wants to meet them. Something's missing, something doesn't work. And a lot of it, even though we could talk about the job spec and the salary and the location and the company, a lot of it as well, the other, I would say probably what I just said there, those points, that's about 50% of it. The other 50% then is the candidate's anxiety. Do they want to leave the job? What's their motivation? And finding out those bits and bobs about the candidate and working out where they are in their mindset. The typical example I had of that, flipping out before COVID, so back in like 2018, 2019, I had a candidate that went through a 3-stage interview process, was living down in Surrey, was thinking of moving up to Birmingham, came through a 3-stage interview process in a role that was a lot more senior than what he was currently in, a lot more money, and then ghosts me right at the end of the process on the 3rd interview, disappears, doesn't even respond. In fact, I was trying to call him on the way home, and I thought, oh, maybe it's a bit too soon, but every time I've spoken to him when he's driving his car, he still answers the phone. So I left it that was like on a Friday. I left it to the following Monday to follow up with him. Nothing on the Monday, nothing on the Tuesday. Client comes back saying, we think we're going to offer him the job. And I was like, oh, great. Try to get hold of him. Nothing on the Thursday, nothing on the Friday. I said to the client, I can't seem to get hold of him. I wonder if he's gone on holiday and not told me or something, or something has happened. And I never got hold of him in that time frame. And then the next week, nothing. The week after, nothing. And that was it. That was like, offer was never going to happen. Never go to the candidate. Everyone scratching their heads. What the hell is going on? And then about 6 months later, it might be a bit sooner than that, a couple of months later, I actually get the candidate on a call. But mostly because I wanted to find out if he was interested in a role closer to him, but not as far as Birmingham from Surrey. And he answered the phone. We got into it a little bit. I just questioned him just to find out what was going on with him. And he said to me that his wife was not happy about relocating. And you're kind of like, oh, shit. And then when you look at his CV and you think, really, he hasn't had a job outside of 10 miles of his home or outside of 20 miles of his home. So he's always stayed very close to home. And his wife is from that particular area. She's got a family there and everything. And they're just not the type of people to relocate. And what I think happened in that scenario is that he got swept up in the narrative of the scenario, where it was like a faux motivation for the role. But once it got to that last interview, the final interview, it all came apart in his head. Or what could have happened, he didn't tell me this, but he phoned his wife after that interview, and they did actually say to him in the interview, I think we're going to offer you the job. He phoned his wife, and that's when the truth dropped from his own wife about what was going on in his life. So that is easy then to say no, I won't go for this job then. And then you just drive home and you know, get out of the car, park the car, get out of the car, go in your house and live your life. But then you could just push away the other people. Oh, I've said no now in my mind. I don't need to tell anyone else. And that's like a conscious ghosting to self-preserve yourself from making yourself look like a dickhead in front of other people by telling them no. And we need to get away from that and be more honest with ourselves when it comes to that. And that's recruiters as well, need to be more honest with that as well. But I think recruitment's ghosting, as I said, that in that kind of section one of ghosting, rules of ghosting, is mostly laziness than anything. not anxiety-based ghosting. It's laziness and lack of a process. So, you know, the psychological base of ghosting is different levels of it, conscious and unconscious. And that conscious ghosting is the self-preservation, in my opinion. This is my opinion. I'm not a psychologist. This is just 18 years in the recruitment game, kind of come up with these thoughts. And then there's like an arsehole ghosting, then, which is the last of the ghosting, which could kind of cross over into that subconscious ghosting of self-preservation as well. But I have very little experience in this. I'm just running with what people tell me. But it's like the dating scene, or some friendships, or even family members as well now ghost. And it's more of an ignorance thing. It's more my friends in the dating scene go out for a date, and then they, you know, suddenly ghosted for a second date. And it's obviously that they don't fancy them or they don't like them. So instead of saying sorry, I don't fancy you, I don't like you, or can we be friends? You know, I think they can't be asked to do that even. So they just don't. They just don't. So that means then, in essence, that it's not a self-preservation thing. It's an arsehole thing to do. That's an arrogant thing to do, I should say. And that's kind of the part. And I generally believe that that part of society is what affects everything else. And this generalistic kind of theme we see running through society of ghosting people through sheer laziness, through, you know, not taking jobs or whatever it is, ignoring people for interviews, not turning up to interviews, or as a recruiter, or as anything kind of in the business world, laziness, lack of process, and arrogance as well could fit into that one. The theme runs through it all. Like this particular person didn't turn up for the TikTok this morning. I can't categorize until I understand. Maybe they were busy, maybe they forgot, maybe, you know, you got all these lists of things. But if you're doing the right things as a person, whether that's the dating person, the recruiter, or the candidate, as long as you follow up and push through and ask the questions of the ghosting people, then you've done all the job you can do. And if they don't answer you, then it's their problem, not your problem, and then move on. It's about 15 minutes to tell you that. Just move on from it. And us in the recruitment industry are very good at doing that, moving on. It's painful. And if you're in your first few years of recruitment, and I'll be honest with you, 18 years down the line as well, someone ghosts you and you relied, and this is God honest truth now, okay? If you're not in the recruitment industry, I'm going to tell you some truth here. You're targeted and rely on people, bums on seats, because that's how you make money. And when that falls through, and you've done all that work, it doesn't matter if it's retained, because even retained, you've got a piece of it, and it all falls through. You haven't got the second or third or fourth piece of it. And you just think, oh, that's a month now, I'm not going to hit target. And the consequence in some places, in some companies I've worked for, is your job. Your job's on the line, especially if you have one or two of those situations. And then it's thrown back in your face as you're the problem. But you're dealing with a double-edged sword of clients and candidates, and spinning those plates of clients and candidates, and trying to solve the problems on both sides of the fence at the same time. Then, on top of that, what is the psychology of the candidate? What is their motivation? Why are they turning up for this interview? Why are they going to turn up for this interview? And all those list of other things that you've got to manage in that process. And you know, companies say to me, oh, why have I got to pay you 15, 20% of the fee? And you kind of say to them, well, because of things like this, to get A to B, we've got to go through all these things and really understand how to get that person in front of you. That's a lot of work, but also that's only like 10% of the job. The 90% of the job is finding the people, finding the jobs as well to work with. And you know, business development is nearly half, if not 60% of the recruiter's job, to find work to work on, first of all. And that's a 360 recruiter. If you're in-house, I think in-house is even harder again, because you've got to work to certain criterias, and sometimes the resources are even less than what an agency has. So you've got to rely on your wits and your abilities to deal with these things. So this is the thing about recruitment that a lot of people need to understand. So as you're trying to, like I say, in your first few years, this happens and you have a couple of dropouts, you will get sacked. Simple as. You'll just get thrown out the door. And then you go to the next company. Sometimes you perform a bit better. You get past that probational period. You get 9 months, 10 months, 12 months. And you're doing okay. And then you have another one then. And it affects you as much, if not more, the second time, third time. And here I am 18 years down the line. I've lost a lot of offers in my time. I've lost a lot of interviews. I've had a lot of things have happened. Things have fallen through. Companies, recessions. I've been through a recession. Been through a pandemic as well. Whatever the freaking hell this is in 2023, going through this now at the same time. And us recruiters are tough, and we're a very good barometer of how the market is faring and how companies are faring and how candidates the general public is faring as well. Very good barometers. And when you start seeing counter offers, or you start seeing ghosting a lot more, or you start seeing things fall through a lot more, you start questioning your processes and thinking there's something not right here. But if you roll back one or two steps and you look at it, you really find that society is all going through the same thing at the same time. And that brings me back to what ghosting is. Ghosting isn't specifically a recruitment issue. It is a societal issue, generalistically happening across, I would presume, the world. I can't speak for countries that have different cultures to us. I'm not sure if ghosting is a thing in Japan, South Korea. I don't know. Where etiquette is very, very high standard in places like that. And that might be it. It's just poor etiquette as well for people. So, yeah, I mean, we've got to really think about these things. If you're in recruitment, don't take it to heart. Try to get to the bottom of it. If you can solve it, solve it. If not, you're wasting your time. Move on. That's it. That's basically it for ghosting. And that's the struggle of a recruiter. And if you are, let me mention that now, actually, whilst I'm talking about that. If you are in that situation and you're in a recruitment agency and the blame game is on you for people not turning up, but you know you've done everything you possibly can and you can document it, because that's the thing about tracking on CRMs. If you're not documenting on CRMs, there's no evidence. That's what I used to say to my staff. And if you could track it and you document it and you show the journey to that situation, then if a manager is going to sack you, that's just shit, because you've done everything you can in the job. However, if you haven't done that and you get sacked, then that's the big learn for you in recruitment in this situation. And that's the only thing I can say. The sad thing about recruitment is that we are defined by the last month. If you've put money on the board and you're hitting targets, then they're going to dance along with you and shake your hand and take you out for drinks and help you ring the bell, whatever the hell it is in your office when you hit target. You're the hero of the day. But then when you're not, it turns very quickly. And I've been on both sides of those fences, and I've been the manager watching both sides of those fences. I just think it's a shitty place to be, especially in the recruitment game where, as I just explained, you're dealing with other people. Your other people are your products, are your baked beans on the shelf, or however you want to put it. And other people is your thing you've got to deal with. And you've got to understand the psychology of other people sometimes. Not like a freaking absolute, Batman-esque criminologist kind of understand everything about everyone. What I mean is, you've got to understand that if you don't explain yourself, if you don't approach a person properly, if you don't listen to them, then you're not going to get them to B, from A to B. And that's when you're going to start having problems. We're not all perfect. Sometimes I misinterpret things. Sometimes the candidate misinterprets things. I'm sure you go through it as well. So it's a difficult thing. But if you are in that shitty situation where your manager's going to throw you out the door, I'm so sorry for you. It's happened to me a few times, and I'm sure it'll happen to many recruiters out there a few times. So yeah. Anyway, I just wanted to record this. Semi-rant. What is this? This is just me talking to myself, isn't it? Like drive time in the night, you know. Did anyone used to listen to those radio stations late at night, and the person used to like have a really croaky voice and then play the odd song, but used to talk for hours about shit? That's what podcasts are, basically. It's that dude that used to play at 1 o'clock in the morning, hardly any music, and just talked about his relationship or about the problems. Especially American listeners to this know what I'm on about with some of the smaller stations. But yeah. Well, I'm going to go. It's lovely speaking into your ears, and I really hope you have a great weekend if you're at a weekend. If not, have a great week if you're at the start of the week. If you're in the recruitment industry, good luck. I hope it all works out this week. Go get them. Take care. Bye-bye.